For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
I'm Sir Jimmy of House Hunts. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we're into Catelyn 6 of A Storm of Swords, the precursor to the Red Wedding. Symbolism everywhere. The red will flow, will drop on the floor. Walder Frey just being an absolute menace in this
mayhaps.
Chapter.
Lots of mayhaps.
Let me tell you something, Matt. After reading this, and I mean, I know we've read the series a bunch, but like, Walder Frey's better in the books, dude.
Oh,
like, the actor's fine, but dude, some of the lines, like, There's so much more from him, I feel.
And I'll say this, you know, we criticize Roy. I mean, not criticize. I don't have a problem with it, but you know,
I like Roy. Some people,
I thought this is one of Roy Dotrice's better performances.
I would agree. I usually read physically the chapters. Yeah. Today I was running a little short on time, so I actually ended up doing the audio. And you know what? Everyone else can get bent, man. I love Roy. The later books, he was dying, so he struggled through Dance of Dragons. Right. But you know what, man? When it comes to doing the awful Walder Frey, old, vindictive, petty, weak man, like, he nails that voice. The performance,
especially nailing in the jabs that he takes in this chapter of like, oh yeah, I'm sure it's easy to swear oaths and oh, so good.
Yeah, actions. Well, actions speak louder than words. Like, oh man.
Other than that, Jimmy, how you doing today, man? You doing okay?
Doing all right. Last week I was out. We hadn't missed the episode because I had surgery on my face. I got a wisdom teeth taken. I was pretty routine, but then I had a benign tumor in my cheek and they removed it, but there's still a lump on my face. So I'm hoping that goes away. That would be really swell. But, you know, it's all good, Matt, because it's golf season. We're back out there. We're hitting nine almost every single day. Mm-hmm. It is wonderful. Wonderful out there. Nice. I shot +6, one of my best scores ever yesterday. So I was very excited.
I don't really know much about
six over score. Par. So it took me 6 more strokes than par. And that's on 9, so it's not super impressive. If it was 18, I'd be way more thrilled. But on 9, which for me, I've been hitting like +9 to +11.
So what do you have to, what do you want to be to where you're thinking U.S. Open?
Like -3. I don't know. It's never happening. Yeah. It's never. They should have put a golf club in my hand when I was 10 or 6, and I would have had a chance to play in college. But yeah. I mean, if I grind really hard, maybe I'll make the seniors tour when I, you know, in 40 years
someday.
Maybe that should be my goal. Yeah.
Well, hey, that's good. That's good. I have been we're baby proof in the house because we are getting close to walking. Uh-oh. And I'm just like, Okay, now I have to. Basically, I'm just picking her up and I'm taking her around the house. And I'm like, all right, if you were to stand, would you be able to open this drawer? Yes. Okay, check, you know, and making a checklist of all of the things.
Just carrying her around and facing things.
Basically. Yeah, I mean, I could, you know, get a tape measure out, but it's so much more fun. And she thinks it's funny. So, yeah, mm-hmm. So now I'm going around. I'm like, oh, there's an electrical cord I need to move. There's an electrical cord I'm going to have to stuff under the cat, you know. So mm-hmm. all of those things, just getting the house ready, because I think we're like a month or two away.
Man, that's wild.
Yeah, I mean, we're not, she's just about to be standing, I think, you know, and birthday is 1 year is next month, which is crazy to say, but yeah, that's, I'm trying to get ahead of the game here.
Yeah, you gotta stay ahead, because kids, I feel like, are just constantly trying to hurt themselves no matter what they're doing, right?
Yeah. Well, we don't really have, there's not really that much Game of Thrones news. There's a few more details about the video game. I think it's just going to be the King's Road mobile game. It's also going to be a computer. We've looked at it a little bit. They're just showing some more of the classes and stuff. It's going to be coming out later this year. George, you know, had a post, but he didn't really say anything very much about Winterwater. I guess House of the Dragon is beginning filming in October. I thought we had seen news that they were already filming. Or maybe it was just they was already in production.
I think they might have did roll call for the cast. They brought them all.
That's
in
right. Oh, like table that reads.
Was it. Yeah, right. I think that was it. Yeah, but they are filming. George had a throwaway thing about wins. He was just kind of like, you know, he doesn't have to worry about, but you know, just saying that books are awesome because he doesn't have to worry about budget. He just needs to write the damn thing, and he wish it would come faster. He does feel pretty good about it, but I mean, it's not just
yeah. I mean, so I guess to me, if they're filming in October, based upon, you know, now we've covered so many seasons of this and other things, that is like, all right, we have a pretty good guess. It takes about 6 months of VFX.
I think we might not see the August.
Oh, I think it's to be later than that. I think it's
more. You think so?
I'm thinking October of next year.
Okay.
Which, I mean, I know it typically has come out in August, but I don't know. Could be October.
Yeah. I mean, end of summer, fall of 2026 is most likely, right?
Yeah.
That seems like a long time, doesn't
it? Yeah. So we'll have to see, wait and see. There's really been no more news on Dunkin' Egg trailers or anything. My guess would be Comic-Con, I think, is in June. So my guess is that's when we'll get another trailer or something for it to kind of,
yeah, I think marketing spending's down overall. Not just there, but like everywhere.
I think a lot of the Warner Brothers budget is going to be going towards Superman. I think that's they're putting all of their money into promoting that, because they need that thing to be huge, which I think it will be, but I think you're gonna see that. So yeah, so I don't know if we're gonna get any early teasers or anything about that, but I would say probably June is my guess for the next trailer.
I'm hoping so. Have we talked about when it's supposed to actually air? Like, they haven't announced a date, right?
No, they just said later in this year. So yeah, it's supposed to be 2025. But I still could maybe see it be August. And it's only going to be 6 episodes. So
yeah.
If you do it in August, then maybe, you know, because one of the things they ran up against was the NFL.
Yeah, that's true.
And so that's why they wanted to release in August. So that way it would start before September, which is when the NFL starts. So I think maybe they could do the same thing. Because if you start in August, if you start August 1st, then you're set. Because then you only run into the NFL for 2 weeks.
Well, also,
actually, really, maybe only 1 week. Because you don't want to
push it off, though. Because in 2026, you'd be going up against yourself for awards. And you know what I mean? Like, I don't think they would want to do two shows. So they got to get it out.
No, HBO dominates the awards so much that I don't think it matters.
You don't think they care? Yeah, maybe they don't. Maybe I'm, but they care about money.
They have Last of Us. They have Last of Us. Season 2 is going to be coming out. And HBO, White Lotus. Like, HBO is so full of good shows that it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, when you look at the Emmy nominations, it's usually all HBO.
Yeah. For a good cause. I mean, for a good purpose, I would say a reason. My goodness, I can't talk today. So maybe I'm not, who knows when they will release it, but I will say this, just remembering Dunkin' Egg. I mean, that House of the Dragon wait doesn't feel nearly as terrible, knowing that there'll be at least some sort of media, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause yeah, there was the interview with George was a Collider interview, and he said, they're already working on season 2.
Okay, they're probably writing, if I had to assume.
Yeah, I mean, just writing. Yeah, he says he's seen all of episodes, all of season 1's episodes, and approves. So take that for whatever it means compared to some of House of the Dragon season 2.
Hey, to be fair, he never said he approved of all of season 2. He said he watched Blood and Cheese and liked it.
Right. Yeah, now they're working on the second season. The two characters were really special to me. But that's, he says it's a little softer, a little more humorous. I hope the audience will be open to that kind of change, which we've talked about. I think they will be.
Yeah, I think so.
I think because you can bring in more of the don't say it, we'll get in trouble, casual audience. But no, you can certainly bring it into people who don't like a lot of shows that are like blood, you know, I don't like those blood gory sex shows that they air on. More conservative crowd, I guess you could say.
Yeah, just I mean, honestly, it would be an entry point for like teenagers, right? Like you're not sure if you really want your teenager watching Game of Thrones, Dunkin' Egg, but you love the universe. Dunkin' Egg would probably be a pretty good intro to that.
It's as close to we've talked about it. it's almost a kid's book.
Yeah, I would say adventures it's definitely not new adult YA territory possibly.
Yeah,
I mean there's a lot of YA series out there that are very sexualized and pretty gruesome actually, so many things could pass for YA. It's more of a marketing label than anything, but I will say we don't know what they do with Dunkin' Egg. They might make it super raunchy.
Yeah,
so who knows.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hey, let's dive into today's chapter. Man, we are, I know we keep saying it every episode. Oh, we're getting closer. We're getting closer. I mean, this is basically it. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've now entered the first stage of the Red Wedding. So Rob's host approaches the twins in the rain. Rob rides at the head with Catelyn, Edmure, and beside him, and Sir Reynold bearing his banner. Catelyn cautions Rob about offending Lord Walder Frey, and advises him to ask for food and wine as soon as they arrive to secure the guest right. They are met with a contingent headed by Sir Raymond Frey, Lord Frey's grandson, and three of Ryman, son Edwin Blackwalder, and Peter Pimple. When they come near, Grey Wind begins to growl and leaps forward, causing Peter's horse to throw him. Sir Ryman is angered that Queen Jane is not among them, and Catelyn offers her apologies, but Blackwalder says that Lord Walder will be displeased. The Freys then have their rooms prepared for Rob, Catelyn, and Edmure, and their bannermen at Water Tower. But Rob's army is to cross the bridge to the far end and join the men of Lord Frey and Lord Roos Bolton beneath pavilions erected for the wedding. not so good. And when they reach the gatehouse, a Grey Wind refuses to continue and howls. Lame Lothar comes up saying he must fear the water and offered to give him over to the Master of Hounds. But Rob has Sir Reynold stay with Grey Wind instead. Rob enters the Great Hall where Lord Walder and his eighth wife await. Lord Walder is relentless in his veiled insults against Rob, making it clear that the king betrayed him by breaking his solemn oath. Rob apologizes, and then Roslyn is brought out. She is by far the most beautiful of Walder's daughters. After Edmure meets his soon-to-be bride, Catelyn asks the Lord of the Crossing for some food and said bread and salt, of course, and the old man welcomes them as guests to his table. When Lord Bolton joins them, Rob finds out more of what happened at Winterfell. His bannermen tell him that Ramsay rescued many of the women and has been fighting the Ironmen. Lord Bolton again states that his bastard son's blood is tainted, but maybe his deeds will atone for the crimes he committed. He tells them that Ramsay is holding Theon Greyjoy hostage, and he shows them a piece of Theon's skin, his son having been flaying the captive Greyjoy. Roose explains that as Bolton Greyjoy's sole surviving son, Theon's uncles will want him dead, will want him dead as his claim to the Seastone chair is greater than theirs, and they can demand concessions from the Ironborn as a price of Theon's execution. Rob reluctantly agrees for Theon to remain imprisoned at the Dreadfort. Roose lost men crossing the Trident with Gregor Clegane's army attacked at a Ruby Ford. Roose has brought many his own Bolton men, as well as Karstarks, leaving Kyle Condon and Ronald Stout to guard the Trident against Gregor. So a ton of things to break down in today's chapter. The first is, I think even if you're a first time reader, just so many ominous things happening.
Yes.
I would say almost obviously ominous. And I feel like your first time reading, you should still be getting something's wrong here.
You would think so, but there is one thing that George does really well, and that's the breaking of the bread, right? The breaking of the bread.
Then you'll be protected. Safety.
And we have heard this multiple times in the series up to this point, right? So George is showing a custom, which is great world building, right? This is something that we believe in this world, blah, 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 blah. And then what happens when that construct goes away in the world? Like when someone doesn't decide to play by the rules, which ironically, I'm not saying Walter Frey's right, Matt, but did Rob not also break a custom, an oath?
He did.
Like Rob decided not to play by the rules agreed by everyone in this society. And it has now led to someone else saying, well, I don't have to follow the rules.
Yeah.
These social contracts are very important, it would seem.
Yeah. I mean, does two wrongs make a right?
It's a good question. My mom always said no.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I'll get the chapter pulled up here on Kindle, but, I think the biggest thing is Grey Wind. Like that should be your immediate indicator that like something is wrong, right? Because Grey Wind is growling. He doesn't want to go near anything. And that should kind of serve as like things are not looking particularly great here.
Oh, and Walter is just flaunting it. I mean, talking about we'll spill some red on the floor, or we'll let the red flow, or whatever the quote is in the chapter. Like the whole time he's alluding to something, right? And one of the things that kind of caught me is like Edmure being so shocked that he's getting a good looking wife and she's crying. Yeah. And it's like she knows what's about to happen. Like she is
very much. She knows something. She knows something's which is interesting because it feels like that's the kind of thing that Walter would not explain to her. Well, so she knows.
She might have pieced it together, though. Not all the Freys are deficient. I think that she seems like she's the most advanced, maybe, of the bunch. But I think she has an idea. Because, I mean, also, Rob's like, let me go march my men across the bridge. And Walter's like, they won't get lost. Don't worry about it. You know, like.
Yeah, so right here, too. I mean, from the get-go, you said the breaking the bread. I mean, that's like it's in the second paragraph, right? Rob, listen, or not the second, but like the third or fourth paragraph. Mm-hmm. Rob, listen to me. Once you have eaten his bread and salt, you have the guest right, and the laws of hospitality protect you beneath his roof. So clearly, Catelyn at least thinks to some degree we might be walking into a trap.
Oh, absolutely. And she's saying it is imperative for us to get this. But honestly, if you think about it, like, what are you going to do if he doesn't give it to you? Like, your army is across the bridge. So, mm-hmm. like, you came in here on faith. The bread, if he would deny you, what would they have? They wouldn't have done anything different. They would have just slaughtered him there, right? So,
yeah.
Walter, almost, to be honest with you, it's almost more awful that he offers them because he is giving them the symbolism of safety just to take it away, which I'm sure he felt when Rob took away the marriage oath, that he took away a lot of the securement for his family in the future too, right? So right. Walter is going eye for an eye here.
Right. And I think for Walter Frey, the thing, and this is something that we don't really see because we don't get a point of view chapter to see all this stuff, but clearly Roose Bolton and Walter Frey have a conversation that takes place off page.
Oh yeah.
Oh, right.
And that everywhere.
Yeah. And that's one of the most interesting things about this is because it's obvious that because you look at the two powers, Roose Bolton is doing the same things to the Starks that Walter Frey, I think, is really trying to do more to the Tullys, because that's his mm-hmm. liege lord is the Tullys. And he's like, this is a chance for me to take power from them, just as it is the same for the Boltons to take power from the Starks. But you look at these two guys, you can almost argue right now at this moment, these guys have all the chips in all of Westeros.
Oh, in many ways. Yeah. I mean, they've been elevated at this point.
It's huge because Bolton has Theon Greyjoy, who he believes at least at this point, and I think a lot of the realm would believe, is we have the Iron Islands in Theon. And now here with the Freys, you've got the Starks and the Tullys.
Yeah, and Roose is showing his hand a little bit here, isn't he? He's kind of saying, hey, we got a king, prisoner of war. And they're like, what are you talking about? Like, First off, stop flaying him. That's very weird. Like, Jesus, dude, just take his head off. It'll be fine, you know? So that is such a horrible thing, which I don't believe that's in the show, right? I don't think Roose hands her Theon's skin, or does he? I can't remember. It's been,
I know they send, I remember they send, the, you know, Theon's member to Balon Greyjoy.
I do remember that. I guess it just kind of shocked me of how gruesome that is. Like, for Roose Bolton to feel like that's normal, I wonder if that's something he would have done had he not known what was about to happen. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, let's say the betrayal's off the table. Would Roose Bolton still hand someone a piece of skin?
I don't know, maybe.
Like, at this point, he can kind of show his
the
hand.
Show, like, the show didn't go... I mean, the show did show them, obviously, some flaying, but it didn't go as deep into it as they are in the books. Like, they're way more like into the books.
Yeah, it feels like the whole clan of Bolton is this weird, like, heretic, almost, like, family, right? And it definitely feels more horror-esque, like leaning into the vampire things that we like to talk about with the Bolton theory and all this stuff. Roose comes across as an absolute ghoul in this.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this is, you know, one of the things, and I was reading this chapter, Jimmy, and it's kind of like a totally different direction. And the only reason I began thinking about it was because you have a character here named Peter Pimple, but of course it's spelled P-E-T-Y-R, just like Baelish is spelled, and Tired. Roy Dotrice reads it as Petyr, is right. This is actually one of these moments where I think you could argue kind of against how powerful Littlefinger is, because, you know, when you think about Varys and Littlefinger and like the webs they're trying to spread over all of Westeros.
Yeah.
Clearly he would not be thrilled with Catelyn being killed here.
Oh, right? No. No,
and,
yeah.
And for sure. And so how did he not see some of this stuff coming when he's on the small council with Catelyn, with Cersei? He's on these small councils, and how did he, I mean, it's just left open-ended and we'll never know, because they never even go down that route of really what happened with his mother, because then he just becomes kind of focused on Sansa and taking the veil.
Do you think
he knew this was going to take place beforehand?
No, I don't think he knew, and I'll tell you why. Because I think the downfall of Peter Baelish is that everyone knows that he's up to something. Every single person around Peter Baelish is like, it's Littlefinger, be careful. Like, they are going to give him absolutely the most limited amount of information possible, because they don't ever want him having a leg up. And I don't think anyone trusts Littlefinger. I mean, Catelyn literally told Ned, like, the only thing you need to know in King's Landing is, like, you shouldn't trust Littlefinger, right? And of course, he ends up trusting him. And it kind of stabs him in the back. I do not think that Baelish would have been pro killing Catelyn, though. If he sees it as a necessary step to maybe, like, Catelyn's a lost cause, but now he has Sansa within his grasp. You know what I mean?
I don't know, man. I still feel like, Lysa and Sansa to him are like second place. Almost like third and fourth place. Yeah. Really. I still feel like if he could do anything, it would still always be about Catelyn.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree with that. And that's why I think, you know, and also that history is not unknown. So of course, maybe the Lannisters would be worried about him turning coat. I don't think he had any idea personally.
No idea. So there's nothing mentioned on the small counts. Because this is probably more Tywin Lannister, because the way this whole thing unfolds is, like, every time we hear about it, it's really through like a Tyrion POV, where he's at a council meeting and the news get brought in. And so it's really Tywin is doing all of this stuff behind the scenes.
That he's doing it behind the scenes. He has special deal. Pycelle obviously is someone that is on the small council, but he's a very different person on the small council than he is in private with Tywin, because they've made deals and everything else. There's that cool deleted scene in the show where Pycelle drops the mask for a little bit. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
On the shore. That's a really cool scene, but it also illustrates kind of what the small council is.
Was that deleted? I thought that was in there.
It was deleted. Yeah. It's a deleted scene.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But it is, the small council is a performance. Like, it's not transparent, right? Like, they're still playing politics at that table, because they each have a position that they want to hold, or maybe one that they want to get to. So even that is still posturing and play in many ways. So I don't think that everything is always devolved, you know, at the table. I don't think that Peter would know personally.
Yeah. Okay. Let me see here. Okay, so let me read some of the comments. This is a really good comment. So this is maybe my fourth or fifth reading of the series. Something that always strikes me about this, this is from the reread Reddit, reread chapter, is acknowledging the rain. It's such a small thing, but it adds so much to the misery. Yeah. The rains delayed us. Such uncertainty. The phrase use it to their advantage. Martin does an excellent job of putting us in the middle of everything. The rain makes us feel like we are strained and tired, but it's all set up for what is coming. Which is the Reigns of Castamere.
The Reigns of Castamere. So we got the Reigns of Castamere, some rain happening. Later on in the Red Wedding chapter, we'll talk about the percussion and the drums and the beat of the rhythm of the chapter, which is one of the most climactic things I've ever read. It's one of my favorite things. Still gets my heart pumping every time, but also, you know, rain hitting the roof, you know, that has a percussion to it almost as well.
Yeah. There's some other chapters here. This is my third somebody saying this is my third read through, and this is the next four chapters combined are just such a well-written depiction of such an awful event. The chapter opens up at the saddest point in the series so far from both Catelyn and Arya's perspectives. I would, like we said earlier, this is almost kind of like the same thing as this is really this book's kind of Battle of the Blackwater.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. You know, when you think about the Battle of the Blackwater and how you get that big block of those chapters and they all come together, I mean, it's such a cool thing that you're going to be seeing it through multiple events. And I think I that's why I like actually that the end of it is from Arya's perspective, because she gets there and it's just so chaotic. Really, a lot of these big moments, think about that. Arya's, you know, mother's death and Arya's father's death. She's there really for both of them.
Everyone's talking about AI these days, right? This season on Compiler, we're diving deep into how AI is reshaping the world we live in. Join us for a new season of Compiler, an original podcast from Red Hat. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
Get more than you expect with the $5 meal deal, part of new McValue. Five gets you a McDouble or McChicken and a small fry and a small drink and a four-piece McNuggets. Woo! New McValue at McDonald's. Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for limited time only.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
There's a lot of trauma to go around.
What is that going to play through, you know, at the end of this whole thing?
Also thinking about just fantasy books in general, you know, this is Arya's grand journey coming of age as she's traveling through and giving us a really good idea of what's happening out in the small folks' land, right? We see the strife, we see starvation, we see everything. We see the Brotherhood Without Banners, and then she comes to the end of her journey with all this new context and really have kind of grown up in some ways, even though it hasn't been that long. And then what does George do? Pulls the rug, man. He pulls the rug. She goes to reach for the doorknob and it disappears. And then we end up seeing her go on a totally new journey, which I think at the time when this was released, it would have been highly unsuspected that that would have happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Okay. Some other points I want to hammer on here is the bells. This is the first where we get to hear the jingle bells. All right.
Yep.
Yeah. Jingle bells jingled his bells. A thin line of spit ran from one corner of his mouth when he smiled. There's not really a ton on him, but that goes into the bells, the saddest part.
Yes. And then Catelyn thinks about, oh, Walter is a complete dummy and is like, but he doesn't have bells. No bells on that fool kind of thing.
Right.
Like, oh, that's a pretty good diss. I liked it.
Yeah. What do you think? I mean, about, and we always sit around and play what if, but what do you think about, do you think Walter at any moment thought, oh, maybe this is a bad idea? Because now Edmure comes and he meets somebody and it's like, okay, his, you think it's all there's no scenario in which it would benefit them to not do it.
No. I mean, the deal that the Lannisters are giving them is essentially taking from a secondary house to the primary house. I mean, this is such a big, it's a deal with the devil. Like, you can't, and he's been wronged, right? Like, the Starks offered him something pretty amazing and then took it away and then give him Edmure.
Well, is it really to promote them to the main house? Because it's not like they leave and go to River Run.
Well, no, but
and he still wants he leaves Edmure alive, so that way that Edmure's son could well,
then
be,
he's going to take he'll take River Run that way. So
but it's not like Walder Frey goes and takes it.
No, but the Freys do become kind of like the prominent family, because remember the Starks aren't just being defeated; the Starks are being exterminated.
Right.
Along with, you have to assume, the Karr Starks at some point. Manderleys are pretty much up in the air at this point. I think there's like, you know, they're on the Stark side, but like, we don't know how powerful the Manderleys are until later on in the series. But the Freys are thinking, okay, the Boltons are going to take over Winterfell, but now the Freys have opportunity to make some, they eliminate one of their competition in the Starks. They still control a pivotal piece of land. And then three, they're going to have River Run. So they get River Run either way, right? Like, River Run's there either way. Why not go ahead and eliminate the Starks? Also, let's be honest, he's a petty man. He wants revenge. He gets his revenge.
Yeah. Who do you think comes out? I mean, of course, we know what, well, in the books, we don't necessarily know, but who do you think comes out better from this whole deal, the Freys or the Boltons?
I would say, so the biggest thing I've always questioned about the Boltons is, like, do they really think that the North is just going to lay down for this? Like, the Grand Northern Conspiracy is always fun to talk about, but let's just think about it from, like, you know, present time, right? There's a lot about Karr Starks and the main, like, did Roose think that everyone was just going to be really cool with this? It's a weird thing, because the North is very about, like, customs and honor, way more so than King's Landing is, it would seem. So I just, Where we drop off at a Dance with Dragons, right? And Winterfell and the ghost of Winterfell, all these things. It just makes me wonder, like, what did Roos think was going to happen?
Yeah. And why does Roos, why does Roos, I don't know, maybe, I don't know, why does Roos not try to marry Arya Stark?
I don't know.
Right? Because he has this whole weird relationship.
He gets Walder Frey, whatever it is.
Yeah, he has such a weird relationship with his son, you know. And then even in the show verse, you know, Ramsay ends up, you know, killing him. But it's like, it seems to me like it would make more sense even in that version, like, for him to just be like, well, I'm going to marry Sansa Stark. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Because it's not like he's Walder Frey old. Like, that, you know, that's totally different.
Oh yeah, Walder Frey's a skeleton.
Yeah, I mean, but the whole thing's kind of weird. So yeah, some other cool things about this chapter. Obviously, they're all very disappointed that Jane Westerling's not there, because they wanted to, I think, kill her too. That way, they could really end this whole thing. Like, they're all like, you can tell they're all like very upset that she did.
Oh yeah, would love for her to be able to make it.
Right, and one of the smartest moves Rob makes in this whole deal by not having her come and stay. And I think and this goes into like big, huge theory stuff. Is she pregnant? And is that baby gonna live?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think so, yeah.
Because this could go into like George's time skip, right? Because that's ultimately what the big takeaway from this whole thing, right? In terms of like what could crazy happen down the line, is more so the fact that the Jane Westerling doesn't go, and the fact that she could be pregnant. And we know that Winds is supposed to open with a Jane Westerling POV, but people think, oh, the moon tea, and she's not going to have a baby because, you know, her mother gives her that because they, to end any potential Stark line. But I think it's more likely that she is pregnant. And then what does that have to do with the story going forward? Because maybe that was still something where George thought, I'm going to have a time skip.
Oh, I mean, at this point, yes, he did think he was going to have the time skip. So any of those decisions certainly seem like they would have been considered with the time skip. But we also get Fees, which doesn't have the time skip, and there's more Jane Westerling in there, and he's talked about her since. So she has a role to play. So even if she is not pregnant, I think she still has I want to say a major arc as far as like a POV goes, but there's more stuff for her to come.
Do we know when this time skip was supposed to happen?
At the end of A Storm of Swords, yeah.
Initially planned a 5-year time skip after A Storm of Swords, and he scrapped the idea with the Dance of Dragons before it ended up getting split into.
Yes.
So when he started writing it, as he's writing this, he's thinking, I'm going to have a 5-year, the next book, there will be a 5-year jump.
Yeah, he ran into two problems. First problem was, what the hell does Stannis do for 5 years at the Wall?
Right.
And then the second one was, whenever he started writing, he realized that he was spending hundreds of pages talking about what happened during the 5 years. So he's like, I just need to write them.
Yeah. And it's wild to think about this book in terms of that type of mindset, because there are so many events that like immediately take place a 5-year time skip would have been bad. But yeah, the more you think about it, if you think about this book in that light, right, like Darkstar, you know, as opposed to Edric Dayne and all of these characters.
Yeah, personally,
there's some characters where when you leave this, a 5-year time jump could have been kind of cool.
Yeah, I felt as if the five-year gap in theory sounds really neat, and I like thinking about it. But I think he made the right choice by getting rid of it personally. I think that the more intimate moments of like Feast, for example, of Jaime, like, could you imagine not having those Jaime chapters and those
Brienne or the chapters? Cersei chapters?
The Cersei chapters may be the biggest of all. And I believe that she was another big reason why he ended up not doing the 5-year gap too. And he said, you know, so if 14-year-olds have to save the world, then goddamn it, so be it. And I'm like, you know what? You might as well. Like, I'm sure he regrets making them so young without that 5-year gap, right? Because everything would have been better. But I think foregoing the 5-year gap was the right move. A lot of people are going to point and say that it's not, and that's why he's struggling. I don't think that's the case. I think that George is just a slow writer, has always kind of been that way. And it's a hard series to write. Really hard.
Yeah. Okay, some other key points from this. So lines here, right? Like, water phrase, mouth moved in and out, food, a loaf of bread, a bite of cheese, mayhaps a sausage, some wine to wash it down, Rob said, and salt, bread and salt, of course, the old man clapped his hands together, and servants came into the hall bearing flagons of wine and trays of bread, cheese, and butter. Lord Walder took a cup of red himself and raised it high with a spotted hand. My guests, he said, my honored guests, be welcome beneath my roof and at my table. We thank you for your hospitality, my lord, Rob replied. Edmund echoed him, along with Great John, Sir Mark Piper, and others. They drank wine and ate his bread and butter. Catelyn trusted the wine and nibbled at some bread and felt much the better for it. Now we should be safe, she thought.
Nope.
Yeah.
But as a first-time reader, you're thinking, oh, I've heard this, I've seen this before, whatever. And you kind of get like, okay, well, you know, it's going to be tense, but maybe they'll be okay. On a reread, of course, we look at him and we're like, fuck, idiot.
Yeah. Do you think, do you think we should take anything away from the fact that, what do you think, when they say, oh, what did you make of Rosalind? This is Rosalind Frey, Admira's wife, who will soon to be wife. Too small and delicate. Childbirth will go hard on her, but her brother seemed well pleased with the girl, so they all said she was sweet. So do you think seems that like could nice be lady. Something? Well, what if she were to die like in childbirth? Would that be?
Well, it's certainly a possibility. But Catelyn and Edmure have this argument where he's like, you know, he gave me his infertile wife, or there's something wrong with her possibly. And Catelyn's like, well, there might be something where she can't have an heir, but like, think what he stands to gain by getting a Frey into River Run. Like, he will have River Run. Like, a Frey will be in River. And Edmure, and it's kind of honestly, I think, built to show the fact that Catelyn is way more savvy than Edmure is. Like, Edmure is so focused on himself at all times that he misses the bigger picture pretty consistently. Though I do think people are pretty mean about Edmure. A lot of people blame him for all of this. I think that's a little ridiculous, but
I think the show, because I don't like book Edmure is not like as dumb as Show Edmure. Like, Show Edmure at the very end is literally a joke. I'm surprised they even gave him the screen time to have that final joke at the end, because at that point people would have to try to be like, who was this guy again?
Yeah, they showed that rather than having John tell his sister. Yeah, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
they made some weird decisions in that final season, didn't they? But yeah, so I think this is actually a really good example of Edmure being very self-centered and not seeing the bigger picture. And Gatlin's like, no. I think that he actually wants you to, you want to know what I think it is? I think that Frey gave him his best looking daughter because he wants Edmure to feel at least capable of being able to give him a grandson after what's about to happen.
Yeah.
Cause like, imagine if it was like, you know, the worst of the worst and he has killed your, like you would be able to take more comfort in someone that you were attracted to, probably, right? And this Rosalind's going to be at the comfort for Edmure after his sister and everyone around him is murdered. Right. So I think that's why.
Yeah. So, and this is almost one of those moments where when we talk about like how the Freys are gonna go down, a lot of people think it's going to be Catelyn. In the show, it was Arya who goes in and kills all of them. Do you think it's gonna be more Catelyn, or do you think it's gonna be more Arya?
I think it'll be Lady Stoneheart. Yeah, I think Lady Stoneheart.
She needs that since she's actually a character in the show. And
yeah, I mean, for me, I think the Red Wedding 2.0 is a real thing because we know the Frey Wedding is coming in Winds of Winter, and I think that the Brotherhood Without Banners has been raiding.
There's an interesting thing we've never talked about: Catelyn and Edmure, Lady Stoneheart and Edmure. Will they meet?
Man, that would be wild, wouldn't it?
Because that is,
or Blackfish.
Right, because we always talked about, oh, it's Arya or Sansa, but those are characters she could run into. If she goes and she's the one to take out all the Freys, she could march to River Run.
This is a great example of how the books do a lot more than the show, because one of the things that George takes a lot of page time to do, especially in this book, is build out the Tullys. I mean, we have a lot about the Blackfish, we have a lot about Edmure, and we have a lot about Lyza and Catelyn. And the Tully arc, I'm going to call it, does have to have some sort of resolution between the siblings and what's the future of River Run. I could absolutely see Lady Stoneheart coming in contact with not just Edmure, but also the Blackfish.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's such a more interesting dynamic because she is there where she isn't there in the show, because those are characters she could run into. And then maybe, wow, you could almost argue she could. And that goes into the argument of like if Rosalind Frey isn't able to have children, there's so many more things you could do with it. And that's one of the reasons why George is probably like, oh, that's a good idea. Or, oh, that's a good idea. Or,
yeah,
he's taken him so long. Yeah, I mean,
the Blackfish, for instance, is very much a throwaway in the show for all intents and purposes. I mean, he's not a prominent character, in my opinion. In the books, the Blackfish has some mystique. Has some weight to him. Like, he is a player. Jamie thinks he respects him quite a bit. So you have to do something with him, but also I think you have to have some sort of like final resolution for, like I said, the Tully clan as a whole.
Yeah. I think they'll have a bigger role to play as well. Okay. So final stuff here in the chapter, I talked a little bit about the Boltons. And the Greyjoys, that some of that's beginning to heat up here and start like talking about playing Theon will not bring my brothers back. Rob said, I want his head, not his skin. He is Balon Greyjoy's only living son, Lord Boltley said softly, as if they had forgotten. And now rightful king of the Iron Islands, a captive king has great value as the hostage. Hostage, the word raised Catelyn's hackles. Hostages were oft exchanged. Lord Bolton, I hope you're not suggesting that we free the man who killed my sons. Whoever wins the Seastone chair will want the young Greyjoy dead. Bolton pointed out, even in chains, he will be a better claim than any of his uncles. Hold him, I say, and demand concessions from the Ironborn as the price of his execution.
And we know
they say yes, but I feel like this is almost a moment where Rob should kind of know that something's up, because Rob has spent his whole life growing up with Theon almost as a brother, and he would know that the Seastone chair is one and the other people don't even matter.
Right. Also, one of the things,
Theon Greyjoy doesn't have a claim to the throne. Whoever takes it is the one who has the claim to it.
Yes. I'll tell you what I think the Boltons are thinking in this instance. I don't think it's about a hostage exchange or killing Theon. I think it's about putting Theon on the Iron Island's the Seastone chair. I think that they would fight to put Theon on it because no one else is aware other than Ramsay how much control he has over Theon or Reek now. And remember, he has Reek become Theon when he needs him to be.
Right.
So I think that the Bolton plan is, well, we will by proxy have the Iron Islands because Theon will sit there for us.
And that's another route you could go down in the books because you have that.
I mean, Theon definitely seems like he's almost out. Right.
Yeah.
And do you think Theon sits on the Seastone chair by the end? Do you think he ends up ruling the Iron Islands?
I don't know, man.
I don't think so.
I will say this. Of all of the things in the show, especially season 8, Theon's arc in season 7, 8 is without question the best arc of the final two seasons of Game of Thrones. Like you could say, yeah, season 7 and season 8 sucked, but without question, Theon Greyjoy's arc is the single best done thing of all.
Brother,
of
I cried
season 8. Oh, it's so
I cried.
Good.
I don't even like it's Theon. So I good. Cried.
It's so good. I mean, that's one of the things I've talked about. Like in the event they ever did, if George does ever finish the books, because it's told in a POV, like that Bran chapter, right? Like it's not going to go down the same way because there's not the same Night King and everything. But if something did happen to like that, to where Theon is the one protecting Bran, and you go up against like a Night King type thing, whose POV is that? Is that a Bran POV or is that a Theon POV?
In my opinion, I think you probably do Theon because that's another thing in the show.
Eyes turn black and he lays on the ground and he can see the Night King like walking over to Bran. Like that would just be such a cool POV in the books.
Yeah, and Theon's been one of our POVs since the very beginning, almost right. Like it's very early.
Then you'd have to cut to Arya POV and Arya's like racing towards him. So you're like, oh, what's going on with Bran? That would be a cool way to do that. Not that it's probably going to go that. I mean, whether it's if it's Euron, then Euron's the one to kill Theon. Ugh.
Well, that's the other thing I was about to say, though, is the Boltons have this big grand theory of whether they're going to exchange a hostage. I don't think that's it. I think they want to put Theon on the Seastone chair. But George is so good at ruining people's plans, and Euron is about to ruin everyone's plans. He is the ultimate wild card of the series in many ways.
Yeah. Okay. Any other things you would hit on this chapter?
Yeah, of course. I got to bring up Helen Reed somehow. Do you think Helen Reed could help Jane Westerling?
Yeah.
I just want Helen Reed to do literally anything.
Yeah, I mean the whole Westerling thing in The Winds of Winter is going to be huge. And I mean not even the Reeds, but the Jane Westerling is a huge wild card in Winds of Winter because it could shift everything, right? Because let's just say she is pregnant and she is going to have a baby, has a baby by the end of Winds of Winter. Well, now everything's thrown in disarray because now depending on what happens up at Winterfell, like that throws Sansa's argument out, right? Because in the show, they go the idea she becomes the queen in the north. Is Jon Snow, if Jon Snow is found to be a Targaryen by that point and not a thing, then maybe Jon isn't viewed as the king in the north. They find out Rob's baby is still alive.
They find out Bran's alive, Rickon's
Bran.
Alive.
Yeah, then the whole Winterfell thing is thrown totally in disarray.
I think it's a complete and utter change from the show, dude. I don't think it's going to go anything like it. I really don't.
Yeah, there's too many pieces that are.
Yeah, the only thing that does seem to be apparent is that we will have some sort of Ramsay Jon Snow conflict, Battle of the Bastards, possibly. But I think even that goes down far different, far, far different than what it did in the show. Like, I don't even know if the Knights of the Vale show up at all.
No, I've talked, but I think that could be different.
Yeah, for sure.
Because who knows? John still has to get resurrected. I mean,
and that's a good point. You know, I'm saying that the Battle of Bastards is, it looks like that would happen, but we still have to get that guy up from the dead after he,
and then go to Hardhome. I think it's more likely that John gets resurrected by like mid. I don't think he gets resurrected at the end of Winds of Winter. I think it's more like.
Interesting.
Early, I think it's more like early to mid that he. Okay. So, that he gets resurrected. I think he then has to go to Hardhome, where he will then bring down his own wildling army. But by that point, the Stannis Ramsay thing will have to be over.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
Your cat is just the one who climbed up on your desk.
Dallas just jumped up in my face.
Your cat is literally saying, "Hey guys, I thought this was a cat chapter." Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And for those of you guys listening to the podcast, Jimmy's cat just like jumped up on his desk.
Spooked me a little bit.
Right. But by that point, you'd have to have the Stannis John, the Stannis Ramsay thing would have to be over.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So then, maybe it's like John is coming down with an army of wildlings, and he's like, well, they get south because they're trying to flee some sort of Night King or Euron. I don't know, man.
It almost makes you wonder if there's going to be like a bigger culmination of a battle, because you also think about Brienne and her oath to kill Stannis, but also her mission from Lady Stoneheart. Then you have the Brotherhood Without Banners and everyone with Lady Stoneheart. The Freys. Like, do we see like a civil war at Winterfell? Is that what we see?
Maybe.
Like a big, just a mosh. You know what I mean? And then maybe the Knights of the Vale do come riding it.
Does Baelish go with the Knights of the Vale and Sansa?
Dude, Baelish is way up in the air. We have no idea what the hell's going on with that.
I know. That's the thing. And as you continue to climb through the chapters, it's
oh, it's only going to get more confusing when we get into Feast and Dance.
And Dance, yeah.
Yeah. Because the branches, like, I think what we'll see is, and this is what I saw in my last reread, you just start seeing, like, what actually matters in the book. Like, forget about the show. Like, what George is focusing on in books 4 and 5, very different than the show, which means that he's taking it somewhere else. Like, the show focused on different things, I guess is the best way of describing it. Like, they took what was important in a different way.
There's definitely things here that I think are threads that because we think all of these things are going to get answered and they're just not. It goes down to Shay, just that.
Oh yeah, that's done.
I think Shay's the best example because that's one of the, like, where is she from? That's such a big mystery and all this stuff. But it's like that wasn't her purpose. So you have to kind of sometimes I think separate the idea of like, well, this person, like, we have to look at some of these things are important and some of these things aren't important.
That's right, and also
like Jingle Bells, who's incredibly important.
Well, it's also written kind of historically, right? How many things in history are we not sure of that are forever speculations? You know what I mean? Like the rehashed conversations, and then so a new perspective comes out and changes our minds, and like that is how A Song of Ice and Fire is written, and that's why this has been such a successful series. A lot of people, you know, like, man, how can people still be doing theories or whatever 10 years since the last book? And it's like, well, the series is written in a manner to be speculated about. Answers are overrated in a lot of ways, I think.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, hey, that is it for us this week. We want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing Storm of Swords, Chapter 50, Arya 10.
Arya 10, I cannot wait. If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We'll see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
Bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes.
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.